Thank you very much, Professor Sakai, and thank you very much for TAP to invite me to this very, very interesting workshop. I would like to talk about work in progress that I'm doing now. It's a kind of evaluating the work that those working in peace and conflict doing their work in Indonesia. As we know that Indonesia is probably one of the most interesting laboratories for those working for conflict and peace, both in the academic level or those who are practicing peace and conflict. The reason is quite simple. During the last 10 years, we saw so many conflicts taking place in Indonesia. All different kind of conflict took place in Indonesia. You can mention it. Every kind of conflict was there. You can talk about conflict related to distribution of resources, distribution of power, or conflict about identity. So those differentiating conflict into constitutive conflict and distributive conflict can find easily those kind of conflict. So this happened quite almost quite simultaneously after the political reform, after Suharto government, Suharto regime stepped down from power. So we had a ethnic religious conflict, we had irredentism, we had insurgency, and so on and so on. So it is quite interesting then for us at the Center for Security and Peace Studies to evaluate then what have the people working in conflict and peace do their work in Indonesia and to what impact on the conflict and peace in Indonesia. So having started the project, we could finally or roughly find out to identify several ways in which the people working with conflict and peace in Indonesia, which basically starting from the way in which they approach the conflict and the perspective that they have in dealing with conflict. So as a general overview, I would like to divide those working in conflict in Indonesia basically into three different categories based on the perspective that they use or the approach that they use. First of all, those who work with conflict through the essentialist perspective or primordialist perspective, what the view of conflict in Indonesia. Conflict in Indonesia, according to them, is a result of radicalized symbolic or symbolic or interpretive difference between ethnic and religious group. Yeah. So if we talk about religion, then conflict comes from the belief of this religion, but in the very radical way. So if you come to see your religion or ethnicity in a very radicalized way, then there was a tendency that you will go to conflict with other religious believer or other ethnic. So this is a very fundamental approach that many use in dealing with a conflict in Indonesia. So the assumption is very simple. Difference lead to conflict. So this is the main problem with Indonesia. As Indonesia consists of difference in religion, in ethnicity, so there is quite simple and logically logical thinking that it is, of course, conflictual in Indonesia. And this also the perspective that the government in Indonesia, especially under the new order, under the Suharto government, has believed very much. So Suharto government believed that it is the difference, variety of ethnicity and religion make Indonesia very fragile to conflict. And therefore, the policy of the Suharto government was very simple and clear. Let's not talk about difference among us. And Suharto government suppressed all the differences in the name of the unity. So we are not allowed, we were not allowed to talk about difference, to talk about our ethnicity, our religion, because according to the government, this led to conflict. And in order not to bring the people into conflict, then let's talk something different, not touching upon these issues. So we call it SARA. SARA means, SARA is a short of, SARA, suku, agama, ras, dan ethnicity, religion, and race. So we were not supposed to talk about these issues in our daily life, in our interaction with others. This was very taboo, especially also in politics. So this is a quite clear-cut argument against the diversity. The government view that diversity is a problem, so that the unity is the most important thing that the government would like to pursue. And as a result, the policy under the Suharto government was very clear to pursue as many as possible to deal with similarity and unity. So this is basically essentialist and primordialist. And this assumption based on the argument that there is something which is basically conflictual, that a difference leads to conflict. So let's move to another assumption or approach to conflict. That is what we call instrumental perspective. Those working with an instrumental perspective believe that conflict is initially intentionally crafted by those who have interest in conflict. They believe that those have interest will get the benefit from the conflict taking place among the society. Who are they? They are elites at the local level. They are those having interest both economically, politically, or socially. And this is not a coincidence that all the conflict took place only after Suharto government stepped down. Why? Because there was a political opening up in Indonesia. Many, many people then get the access to the political arena. So everybody can have the access to the political arena. When previously it was centralized in Jakarta under the Suharto government and it's centralized in the hand of a few people, then now everybody have the access to the politics, have access to power, and so on and so on. And this happened also at the local level where the conflict took place. So they utilize the differences to get their own interests pursued. So instead of pursuing directly their interests, they use the people. They use the differences of the people. They propagate the differences and promote hatred among the people to fight each other, and then they will get benefit of it. So this is basically very instrumentalist. So this is also very common basic assumption of those working in conflict. And as we will see later, all these assumptions will have a very serious implication in the way in which they try to solve the problem, to propose a conflict resolution in Indonesia. And as we will see also, there's not many work very well. And then there is also the third perspective based on the structuralist assumption or approach. Conflict, according to them, is a product of unjust economic structure or political structure. Discrimination in the economic policy, in the political process, and so on, were the main causes of the conflict in Indonesia. As we know that Indonesia was one of the future economic tiger in Asia, according to the literature or the view in 1980s or early 1990s. But apart from this success in the economic performance, According to them, there were so many serious problems resulting from the economic policy, from the political processes in Indonesia. Democracy was not in place in Indonesia at that time, so many oppression was done by the government and so on and so on to those expressing their dissatisfaction, their opposition to the government policy and so on and so on. And at the economic level, the economic development tried to had the effect of marginalizing some part of the population, giving the advantage of the economic result to certain kind of people, certain group of people, and basically the minority of the group of people related to the power, the clan of Suharto, the family of Suharto. So these are basically the approaches which we can identify from those working with conflict, working in the conflict and trying to bring peace in Indonesia. So let me state once again, there are three which I found working in the at those level. Essentialist or primordialist, there's a belief that the differences in ethnicity and religion was exactly the main issues in the conflict in Indonesia. And the second perspective is instrumental perspective, who believe that those having interest in the conflict are basically the source of the conflict, who created for a conflict in Indonesia. And the third one, the structural perspective, who find that structure, injustice, economic structure, and political system was the result of the conflict. So how we see these three different perspectives at work in Indonesia? Of course, the three perspectives cannot be seen exclusively. They may be differentiated, but cannot be separated. There are some interactions between this perspective. But apart from this, I would like to argue that there are serious problems with this three perspectives, which are basically very elitist. They are coming from outside in. They see the conflict from outside world, from outside eyes. And they will try to give the meaning of the conflict and define the conflict and view the conflict as the way in which they are taught at the universities and they are understood by others and the textbooks and so on and so on. What is clearly missing here is the way in which the people involved in the conflict themselves view the conflict, why they came to conflict, and so on and so on. We have done some research in the conflicting areas, especially in three areas, with Kalimantan, Ambon, and Poso in 2005. And we try not to use the basic textbook of the peace and conflict studies. Instead, we are working through anthropological, ethnographical research methodology. And the finding is quite interesting. We found that the conflicts are basically more complex than those assumptions used in the three different perspectives. So in this case, what is exactly what I mean by this? We found that the root and causes of conflict are basically much more local to the people, much more personal to the people. It's deal with their interaction in the daily life rather than with something structural, something essential, and so on and so on. They are coming, the source and root, the root of causes of the conflict comes from their daily activities, their interaction in their daily life. So this is also very important. There is nothing in our study which shows that basically they have a problem with structural injustice and democracy and so on and so on, because they are not dealing with the state. They are dealing with their own people. They are dealing with each other. And different also from the primordialist assumption, they are not essentially deal with primordial sensitivity. They are not talking about, I'm Muslim, you are Christian, I'm Javanese, you are non-Javanese. It's not like that. Because they used to interact each other for so many years without any conflict. Why then now they have conflict? So this is a question that the three assumptions cannot answer very satisfactorily. So the conflict, either ethnicity, based on ethnicity or religious, is not based on the ethnicity issue, not based on the religious issue, but based on the interaction with each other, past experiences with each other, history of political conflict. The past conflict, for example, plays, of course, very important role, discontent, prejudice, and hatred. But there is no collective mind, collective views, which can be characterized as primordialist or essentialist. So this is quite important that we have to look at conflict in their own terms, in the way in which people see their own experience in their daily life, in their conflict with each other. This is something that used to be neglected by both academics and both who call themselves as peacemakers. They are external to this process. And this is exactly what we need to develop in bringing conflict to an end and to bringing peace to the society in conflict. Now, this project that I'm working on is not yet finished. So I will not be able to tell you how is the final conclusion that I have. But let me tell you how from these three different perspectives we can see the models, of what we call model as a very loose term, the model of conflict resolution that used to be utilized in the case of Indonesian conflicts. First, let me say or call it a state-centric model. This is the model of conflict resolution based on state intervention. So as the ethnic or religious conflict occurred, then the expectation was very big to see the state to intervene. State has the capacity and the authority to use violence to stop the conflict. So state intervention was very important to separate those conflicting parties from killing each other, from fighting each other. Essential part of this state intervention is policies in disarmament, demobilization of the conflicting parties. This is very essential. And as Professor Brenners said, that this is quite important, that this is something that we can achieve is a negative peace. People don't kill each other. They do not fight each other. But is this really peace that we are talking about? But I would argue that this is exactly what come from the essentialist and primordial perspective, which the state tend to use in order to solve the conflict in Indonesia. At the end, what they have is the separation of the formerly conflicting parties into different kind of society. So in Poso, although there is no more conflict, take place now, but we can see that the Christian live in separate areas from the Muslim. And is this a conflict that we are expecting, we are idealizing? This is a question that we are we have to pursue further. And the second models that I would like to talk about is the NGOs model. And those practicing conflict resolution not from the state can be categorized very loosely into this category. This NGOs model focuses on improving the capacity of the local people to deal with conflict and to bring peace. And they start mostly from the assumption that injustice structure are the source of conflict, so the best deal The best thing to deal with a conflict is to improve the capacity of the people to deal with injustices, to bring the awareness of the people about the injustices that they are experiencing and empower them to express their dissatisfaction. So advocacy and empowerment are two key words that used to be used by the NGOs model. But the NGOs model also work in very different assumption, that is existentialist and primordialist. They try to promote interfaith dialogue, intercommunity dialogue, and so on, with the assumption that if they promote the culture of tolerance, then what so-called ethnic conflict, religious conflict, will not take place anymore. So basically, they try to educate people. They try to educate conflicting people to something that they believe will be able to prevent them to get into the conflicting situation. So, again, these are two models that basically put into the conflicting societies from outside. What is still missing that I also mentioned before was how then we should deal with this conflict. Our findings was that we should promote the way in which people have been able successfully living with each other for a long time without conflict. So there must be something in their own culture, in their own interaction with each other, which consists of the capacity to bring peace. This should actually be the focus of those working in conflict, working with the areas of conflict. Not assuming that they have basically a problem with each other or there are basically structural problems within the society which lead to conflict, then we should then look at more positive aspect of the society. Why did these people didn't have conflict for many, many years, for 100 years or so, and so on and so on? And this is where our research project is going to achieve, but so far we haven't reached that stage. We still are trying to find out why we fail to bring peace to those people and believe that they have the capacity to build peace among themselves. But the question is then is, where are these capacities now? And our assumption is that this capacity has lost along with the effort of the Indonesian government to modernize their economy, the political system, and so on and so on. The traditional way of resolving conflict that these societies had probably quite different from the conflict resolution mechanism that we are learning at the university level. So what I mean by this, look at what happened. The development of societies in Indonesia went along with modern society, which celebrate rationality and material aspect of life. They give meaning to rationality and material life more than anything else. But what I believe is, so far, having did the research, parts of the success of the society to build peace for a long time could be seen in the rituals, in the rites and ceremonies, which from our point of view were not something that can be categorized as rational. We may categorize them as suspicion, superstition, irrational, and magical, and so on and so on. And this is something that we cannot very easily accept. But exactly something that we don't believe ourselves is probably the thing that has brought the people live in peace for many, many years. Thank you very much.